Hey, welcome to The Future is Golden. I'm Ruthie Kim, and this is a podcast where we explore what it looks like to step fully into your purpose, potential, and influence. And today on the show, I have a very special friend, Erin Canino. Welcome to The Future is Golden.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, we're so thrilled to have you. Erin, you're born and raised in Lake Tahoe. When you and I first met, you were living in San Francisco. We were both attending Reality Church. And you were practicing as an attorney in San Francisco. Now you're living in the Philippines. You're working with IJM, International Justice Mission, which is an NGO fighting human trafficking and child exploitation. There's a lot of story that we're going to dive in here today. But for our listeners, let me just frame our relationship a little bit. So we were going to church together. I think you were volunteering in my son's youth group. But we kind of got to know each other because you reached out to me about some coaching. And I wonder if we could just start there. Would you tell our listeners what prompted you to reach out? What was going on in your life? And why did we start working together?
Yeah. So I had been living in San Francisco for about 5 years at that point, working at different private law firms, two different private law firms. And while I had a really great job, actually, at that time. I had really amazing coworkers. It was good hours, good pay, you know, all the things that you really want in a job. I was still really unsatisfied with it, which was frustrating because it felt like it checked all the boxes, but I just wasn't passionate about what I was doing. And I was feeling really, really stuck. I had been looking at other jobs for a while, but I had sort of had, since I had graduated law school, I'd had this kind of constant challenge of, what exactly do I want to do in law, in my career? How do I get there? And just feeling really stuck, especially because jobs weren't really opening up. The ones that things that I were interested in didn't seem like I was qualified for or had direction. And so I just was feeling like I really needed some direction. So it wasn't that I was in this really difficult place, but I could tell I was not where I wanted to be. So I had reached out for coaching because I wanted to kind of crystallize, you know, where do I want my career to go? What's my vision for that direction? And I had known that Ruthie did coaching because I think I saw it on Instagram and I was like, it's Ruthie Kim. I want to work with Ruthie. So I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, Erin, I love what you just said there about you weren't in a bad spot, but you weren't where you wanted to be. And I think what you said too about like you had a job, it kind of checked all the boxes, but you still weren't quite satisfied. I'm hearing in there was like kind of a sense for more. And I remember when we first met, you kind of said similarly. It was like, this is great. This is good. And I know there's more for my life. And you and I started working together. And as we were on that journey, I wonder if you could just kind of share maybe what was one of the most surprising things that came up along as we went through that journey, that coaching journey.
What I realized during coaching is that I didn't have a clear vision because I hadn't dealt with some of the things from my past, and that ended up inhibiting me from where I wanted to go. That was really surprising because I kind of thought I was going to come in and just talk about career goals and things like that. But instead it was, well, really, who did God create you to be as a person? What are the things that make you you? And then how does that lean into your vision? And I remember in particular, we had one session where we were talking about these different sort of personality type characteristics. And some of them were landing so well with me, like, yes, you're data driven and you like to analyze and organize. I'm like, yes, that's me. But also there's this other part of you that can dream really big and plan for the future and have this sort of clear forward vision. And I was like, that does not feel like me at all. I didn't identify that in myself. And when we asked the question of, well, why do I not see that as who I am? It made me realize that there were all these things that I hadn't really dealt with. And what it was I lost my mom when, right as I was kind of coming out of law school, she passed away from breast cancer in the beginning of my last year of law school. She had had cancer before when I was in high school, but she'd been in remission for like 6 years, and then it came back. Right actually as I was starting law school. And it was really difficult to realize, you know, during that coaching process that there were so many things about that I hadn't actually grieved and processed because I thought that I had done so much of that. And I had, you know, I had really grieved the loss of her and how my family had changed. So I had actually done a lot of grieving. I didn't feel like I was repressing things or that sort of thing. But I didn't realize that there was more there that I just hadn't totally reached, because it was sort of this sneaky, you know, my life didn't go exactly the way I had planned it to go. So I was, you know, focused on grieving the loss, which is part of the grief journey. But I hadn't realized, oh, well, because of that, you know, I didn't do this thing or I didn't go in that direction. And I kind of lost this. Well, the world is full of possibilities and I can dream really big. I sort of lost that part of myself through that process. And it was challenging also because I almost felt disappointed in myself. I felt like I've already grieved so much. I shouldn't be struggling with this 7 years later, you know, like obviously when you lose a parent, there's always going to be things that just linger, I think, kind of forever when you lose anyone. But sort of those big things, I was like, I kind of have already dealt with this and I realized I hadn't. So I kind of had to go back and honestly relearn the process of how do you grieve these things well so that they don't end up coming out in cynicism about the future and inhibiting, you know, what your vision is.
Wow. Erin, you said a lot of really powerful things in there that I think a lot of our listeners could resonate with. I remember being on that journey with you. And as we began to like really talk about the vision, it did become evident in our conversation that there was some kind of like, you were stuck in some way. And I think you named it there in that this idea that life had not gone the way you thought and in had crept the cynicism. And dare I say, in had crept like the limitation of vision, right? It was like, yeah. You weren't accessing that place of like, well, what is possible? What could I do? It was more like, well, I'm kind of stuck and this is what I see. And so it was interesting how that grief process unlocked greater thinking for you, more expansive thinking for you. I wonder if we could just double click on also what you said around kind of the shoulds of grieving. I definitely resonate with like what you're saying there about when you've moved on from something to some degree, when you've healed to some degree, you've grieved to some degree, when it comes back up, it can be frustrating. It can initially feel like, why on earth is this coming back around? I'm trying to move forward. This feels like it's holding me back. What helped you navigate or maybe like show up to that moment so you could move past the shoulds and actually do the work that you needed?
I think one of the things was just understanding grief better, honestly, and that there are things that are happening in our lives really all the time that we don't necessarily stop to feel how they're affecting us, and that grief really is a constant process. With big things and with little things. And yeah. I think I'm much better at grieving now because I'm more intentional about providing space for it. And it's something I think you have to actually be intentional about because it's not fun. It's not something we want to sit in. But if you don't do it, you know, it just gets trapped in you. And then it comes out in these ways you don't expect that really do limit what you believe is possible. You know, it's crazy feeling in some ways on the other side of some of this, how small my world felt. I didn't think that it felt that small. But when I look back now, I'm like, wow, the things that I believed were possible were so limited. Mm-hmm. And I think so much of that had to do with just not dealing with the, you know, all this huge big thing that was really difficult happened. And now how does that impact how I think about how things happen in the world? And so that was really impactful. Another part of it was, you know, God's just really good. He understands what we need when we need it. But I was actually living at that time with two girls from reality. And we, because God knows these things, we were all kind of going through our own totally separate grief journeys. And being together in that and having that openness to talk about where we were and be really honest, not just with God, but with another person in that sort of really safe kind of community, also provided a lot of space. And there wasn't judgment there. That's the other thing. I think sometimes we feel like maybe we'll be judged for talking about the things that we're struggling with. You can feel frustrated and there's all those things that go along with it. But, you know, having those people that are there with you in it, that was a really, I think, significant part of me sort of learning how to deal with these things so that it isn't just me sitting in it. It's me with people who, you know, love me and understand the needs of being able to process this stuff. So that was really important as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking in my own life, I love what you said about like grieving the big things and the small things. And I think I see that myself. I notice that in the folks I talk with all the time. It's almost like those like little paper cuts of life, right? It's the job you applied for that you didn't get. And then the 10 more that you didn't get. It's the dating apps that just keep feel frustrating, the attempts at dating that don't work out. It's like, it's all these little places in our life where we experience disappointment, where we experience loss, like your words, like it doesn't turn out the way we expect. And that can really impact our mindset and what we believe is possible for the future. And Erin, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about this is I think your story is so relatable. I think there are so many of us that are feeling like, yeah, like I would maybe like to dream bigger. I'd like to have more vision, but I tried that, had that at some season of my life. It didn't go the way I hoped. It didn't turn out. And bridging that gap again back to vision. And I'm hearing for you that that community and that grief and that processing was such a huge part of just naming. I think just naming, wow, that was disappointing. That was a huge loss. And moving forward from there. I know that, you know, we started working together and it wasn't like, da-da-da, like you suddenly every door opened. There was a season of waiting as you were going through this grieving, and there was a season there that was maybe a little longer than you expected. Can you talk about what that was about?
Yes, it's so funny because I went into coaching and I'm like, the result of this, 'cause I'm a very goal-oriented person. The result of me doing this is I'm going to come out with a very clear vision and the job that I want. And it's, you know, that's how it's going to go. And that's why I'm doing this. And then it turned into this whole character process really of, okay, what are all these things that are like holding me back? And I think because of that, because of the work that I really needed to do was internal, not external, you know, like I had sort of narrowed it down as like, okay, my big problem is like this job dissatisfaction. That was not my big problem. You know, my big problem was not dealing with some of these things that internally were holding me back. And so I think because of that, I think God brought me into a season that was actually just of waiting. I had looked for jobs for, you know, months and it just wasn't coming. And so I kept praying about it and praying about it. I was like, I think I need to stop looking for jobs. I think I need to just kind of sit in this and work on these things that are coming up. And again, I was lucky that I was in a good enough job situation where like that was fine for me to be able to do. But the call for me coming from coaching was actually just to kind of wait on God and sort of reframe how I thought about hope before I had actually moved into a new stage. I think that was a lesson that I really needed to learn of like, okay, even though I'm not where I want to be, like, can I even in that stage feel like there's hope and big things for the future? And I was not before, I was not waiting in a place of hopefulness. And I think the grieving process helped me to get to a place where I was waiting in a place of hopefulness because it was, okay, God sees these things. My community sees these things. I'm not alone in this. And it doesn't mean that there's not good things ahead, you know? Yeah. And so that really, that whole waiting period, which was months, you know, it was much longer than I would have chosen for myself to sit in. And I think it took for me, it actually, that was the kind of courage part of like, are you going to wait and not push on to that next thing that I really wanted to kind of just blow by all this stuff and get to that next job? But am I just going to take the step back and actually just have the bravery to sit in those, for me, the harder things, which was that internal work that I just needed to do.
Wow. Yeah. And I saw you do that, Erin. I mean, we were journeying together for quite a few months in various capacities. And I saw the courage that it took for you to say, yes, I'm gonna wait. And it's funny because, you know, maybe for our listeners, like there are some folks listening to this conversation thinking, that's my invitation. Like I'm the go-getter. I'd rather blow past the emotional stuff. Like I don't want to deal with the past. I just want to move ahead. And actually courage might look like pausing and slowing down and resting and grieving. And then for others, it's like the invitation to action, right? There's the courageous next step or the bold request or whatever that is. And I think discerning like where am I on my journey and what is being asked of me But that power in that waiting and just being holding in that space. I think what you said earlier too, around, you thought it was this external, right? You thought it was like just a new job. And how many of us go through life like, well, it's going to be a new relationship or a new job or a new church or a new city. And actually what you did was the deeper work of, it's really not about that. It's my mindset. It's my growth. It's my internal world. Well, let's shift here, Erin, because there was a season of waiting. And then now you're in the Philippines and you're doing really incredible work. And I can still remember the group coaching call or cohort where you kind of announced to everyone, hey, everyone, I'm uprooting my life. I've got a church. I've got friends. I've got a really great job here in San Francisco. And I am going to the Philippines to do what is both really incredible and I imagine to be incredibly heartbreaking work. Can you tell us about what kind of brought about that shift and maybe some of the things you've been learning as you've been living over there?
Yeah. Wow. So many things. So I'm going to start with this group coaching that we were doing was so inspiring for me. It's one of the things that I think we've talked about is it's very easy to be a cheerleader for other people. For me, especially for other women, I'm so impressed with particularly all the women I know in San Francisco. Everyone is just so smart and driven and has achieved so much. And it's just really fun to be in a group like that. But you can look at everybody and be like, well, you look at who you are and all of the things that you've done. Like, of course you can go start that business or go do that thing. But it's very difficult for us to look in, like, at ourselves and think that that's all possible for us. But being in a group where everyone was doing that and we were kind of doing it for each other was really inspiring and helpful. And then I really wasn't looking actively for jobs because I felt like I needed to kind of wait. But I've been wanting to work for International Justice Mission really since law school. If anyone doesn't know, International Justice Mission is an NGO that fights violence against women and children and human trafficking worldwide. So, and if you're a lawyer, it's really a great place to be a lawyer because they do legal work in all of these different countries. And they have these fellowships where they have you come for a year or longer to be able to work with their local field office teams. And so I kind of, for years, I've been keeping an eye out on if, you know, I could do that, if it was available. COVID happened right when I was changing jobs. And so they weren't doing them anymore. So the timing was just never right. And they hadn't reposted those positions yet, but I was scanning on the site and they had reposted the positions in like April. Wow. So I immediately applied because I just knew like, this is it. This is a thing that I want to do. And also maybe that I have been waiting for, because if I had found something else, I wouldn't have done it, you know? And, because it didn't get posted till much later in the spring. And immediately it was like the process went fast. I got it. It was incredible. But it was really challenging to uplift my life because I had such a great community in San Francisco, really involved at Reality. I mean, I feel like my whole family is there. I also really care about the city. I loved being there. And so it was a huge transition. But it was, you know, when I talk about like the world felt like it was getting smaller. Right now, the world feels gigantic. Like the possibilities are endless. And so much of that, I mean, I think living internationally will do that too a little bit just because it's such a different thing. But I think that knowing also that I had wanted this type of job for so long, God knew that. And I wanted the timing to be different. Like I really did. I wish I could have done this sometimes when I was like 25. And I have a little bit of lingering grief over that. Like this, it would have been cool to start my career doing something like this. That's not my story. And some of the things that I did over the past 6 years before I was able to come do this fellowship in the Philippines are so beneficial to the work that I'm doing there. And also gave me this entire beautiful community in San Francisco I would not have had potentially otherwise, if I had just jumped into this. And so, you know, there's always these trade-offs and the timing is sometimes not what we want it to be, but this really ended up being perfect for where I'm at right now. And, you know, I can pause there or I can launch into the Philippines and what it's like to be in the Philippines.
Yeah. 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 Well, I think first of all, I would love to acknowledge you, Erin, for that courage to kind of uproot your life. your journey occurs to me as both the, you know, what we might label as the small steps of courage and the big steps of courage. And I think that is life. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's the small yeses. It's the, I'm going to do some coaching. I'm going to do some grief work. I'm going to, you know, those kind of internal, small is not really the right word for it, but maybe those more internal individual. And then there are these leaps, these like almost like faith leaps where we're just like, I'm going to say yes to this big thing and I'm going to go. And it has been so fun. The couple of conversations we've had since you've been in the Philippines, I've watched your vision for the future expand. I've watched you believe for the impossible. And there was a call I think we were on where a few of us got back together and you came back on and you were and I was like, this girl is preaching. This girl is like, she has experienced that space of being stuck and needing to work through some stuff and needing to wait and then taking this leap and now beginning to see the future in like, wow, there's a lot of possibility there. So I just want to acknowledge you for all the ways you've said yes along the journey. Yeah, can you share about your work in the Philippines a little bit? What's going on for you over there?
Yeah, and thank you for that. It's definitely been a journey, a journey of just learning hope and what is possible. So I came to the Philippines in September, and it really was like, it's such a huge life change. You know, I feel like in some ways it feels a little bit crazy. I was building this really great career. And I don't know what happens after this year, you know, but I had wanted to work in social justice since I went to law school. That's why I went to law school, and I had never gotten there. And so being here now, it's whatever happens next, this is such a gift. So I'm in the Philippines. What IJM does in the Philippines is it works against a specific type of human trafficking called OSEC, which is the online sexual exploitation of children. So what that is live streaming and other images and videos being sold, really created and sold from the Philippines, mostly to Western countries. So like the US, the UK, Australia are big consumers actually of this illegal material. And so what IJM does is it works in every stage of the justice process to try and assist victims and make sure that the justice system is strengthened so that it effectively is able to address these crimes. So it starts really with law enforcement and investigations and working with those teams as they investigate and hopefully have, you know, we everything we do is about child protection. So making sure there's child protection strategies as well. And then, you know, when there's rescues, assisting with those as we're able, going into the rescue process, making sure the child is cared for, is placed in a good place, has the resources they need to be able to heal, and then assisting with the legal process. So that's where I am. I'm on our legal team where we actually prosecute these cases. We're able to interest private attorneys. So the team actually does direct prosecution and then also assists with various prosecutions of our partners to make sure that the local traffickers in the Philippines are held accountable. And then we have a whole other part of what we do, which is the advocacy work, making sure that there's the right laws in place so that these crimes can be addressed. And then I'm also currently kind of working on a team that's focused on the demand side, which is like the US, the UK, you know, where these consumers are, because at the end of the day, human trafficking is just, it's a really dark business driven by money. And, you know, this stuff exists because people are buying it. And which is one of the things I'm really passionate about, especially coming from the Bay Area and understanding the tech culture. You know, there's implications for everything that we create, right? And so it's very important with a crime like this that runs on the internet. It's a tech crime, and it's a child abuse crime, and it's a financial crime. You know, it's quite complicated because it has these different elements, but it's really, it's so fulfilling. And also it is very heartbreaking to be part of it and able, really what I'm doing is assisting the people that do this, you know, for decades. And the people who work in the Philippines at IJM are just some of the most impressive and just beautiful people. And their hearts for justice are so inspiring. And this work is so God-driven and which is something I've never had in a job. You know, IJM is a Christian organization, and we pray together every morning, and it's just like, this is, I think that's what makes the work sustainable. It's very difficult, challenging work, but we're doing it with God. And it, at the end of the day, like it's his work and it's his justice. So it's really just been such a transformative year for me. And also, you know, just a really, I don't know. It just, it's such a cool way to be able to serve, you know, just being over there. And I actually have really enjoyed it so much and feel like there's more for me to do there. So I've decided to stay longer. My initial commitment was for a year and now I'm going to stay an extra 6 months. So just because this is, I feel like this is a work that God's calling me to right now.
Wow. Erin, thank you for all that you're doing in the Philippines. Incredible, incredible work. I'm thinking through the connection between the legacy of what you're part of with IGM and what you're creating yourself, all the children, all the families, all the work you're doing, and how beautifully woven together that is by the Lord with your story. Mm-hmm. And even what we just talked about on this call here, like your initial yeses, you're like, yeah, I'm going to do the work. Yeah, I'm going to wait. Like you could have, like you said, blown past it and just taken a job, but waiting on God's timing. And now to see where he's brought you and the kind of work that you're doing. I find that inspiring. I think I see that as like, you know, the way that God plays the long game in our life, right? Like we sometimes see like blinkers on, small picture, like, oh, the last month or the last 6 months. And God is setting us up to do some big things in the world and to build a legacy, to have an impact. And thank you for just like breaking down what that looks like in your life. It's really powerful. I mean, as we wrap up today, this conversation around courage, we've covered a lot of ground. There's probably some listeners, especially here in the Bay Area, thinking, you know, I'm in a job I don't like, or I feel like I want to do something with my life. I don't know what it is. What have you gleaned along the way in regards to courage? What kind of exhortation or encouragement would you leave our listeners with today?
I think ultimately it was easy for me when I felt really stuck to feel like God wasn't doing anything. And I just don't think that's true. And I think looking internally and also asking, is this kind of like we talked about, is this something where I need to be sort of taking that risk, taking out that big step and making that move and discerning that, you know, with God, with your community, with the people around you, you know, there's strategies for discernment and figuring out, is that really what I need to do? Or is God calling me to sit with him and wait in this? And if he is, are there things within that he's asking me to examine in myself? And I, like for me, I hadn't asked that question. And so I think getting to the point of, okay, is that something I need to do? That requires boldness as much as stepping out and taking that big risk does. And I think we're probably all doing one of those things at whatever point we are in our life. Living life in some ways, I think requires courage, but yeah, taking those big leaps, which for you, you know, could look like telling a friend about a hard thing that you're going through. That is a single like step that it can be really challenging, you know, as much as being like, I'm going to start this business or I'm going to go across the world, you know? And so I think examining what that looks like in your current stage and then knowing, and this was a challenging part for me, knowing that God is going to be faithful in that. And that there is hope and that it's not just, okay, I've suffered these hard things and, you know, that's what I can look forward to. You know, one of the verses that was really encouraging to me is in Psalms, and it said, it's just really simple. And it just says, I believe I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Cause I believe this lie for a long time that like, well, yeah, ultimately things are going to be fine. I'm going to get to heaven one day and like, yeah, the world will be made right. But like God wants to make big change for our lives, like right now. You know, while we're on earth, we're not just here to go through hard things, which is something that I truly felt. And I do not feel that way anymore, but I don't think that's just a result of changing really every part of my life, which I did. It was having that like internal truth and getting to that place.
Yeah. Wow. What a beautiful note to leave us on, seeing the goodness of God. Thank you so much, Erin. Thanks for having this conversation, sharing your story, and we wish you all the best in the Philippines with the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Can I say one other thing about the work? Yeah. I just want to encourage anyone, if you're interested in OSEC or just what IJM is doing in the Philippines. We have a great website, IJM.org/PH, that will take you to the work that we're doing. And then also, if you want to learn more about OSEC, which I think is really important, a lot of people don't even know this crime is happening. And I think the Bay Area in particular, it's important for us to be aware of it. There's a really great podcast called Finding Ruby. It's on Apple Podcasts. It takes you through the story of one of the survivors who's actually now a survivor advocate leader. She's incredible. But it goes through her story and it gives you a lot of information, data, you know, statistics on what OSEC is, how it works. And it's really, it's also just a really beautiful, empowering story. So I'd encourage you to check that out if you have time.
That's awesome. Thank you, Erin. We're going to link that in the notes here for the podcast and definitely encourage everyone to check that out. Such important topics. And thanks for tuning in today. And we'll see you on another episode of The Future is Golden.